Everlast on Radio 3, and I can't move. We're into Tuesday afternoon right now. It's 12 minutes past 12. Welcome back, business futurist Maurice Misolowski, as always, on the line from Melbourne. Good afternoon, Maurice. How are you?
Excellent, Phil.
Excellent. We've got a few things to talk about today. They're all loosely tied together by the word communication. The sad news to start with, Ray Tomlinson, the man who invented email, died at the age of 74 with an at sign.
Yeah, he did. It's a bit interesting to see what they put on his tombstone.
I know, I bet there's a headline competition going on.
I'm sure there is. The editors around the world must have been busting for that one. Look, the guy's relatively unknown by name, but what he created and what he did is something, is a legacy that we will remember forever. And he was the guy that had invented email. What he wanted to do was to find a way to communicate between fellow boffins, between fellow engineers. And it was a shorthand way of addressing, the same way you and I have been used to putting an address on an envelope for however many centuries we did that. He came up with an electronic version. And what he did was to bring that at sign that we are all so familiar with, the A with a circle around it, he brought that to life. It's always been on a QWERTY keyboard, but I really wouldn't know how many people used it before he gave it some purpose.
I wonder what its original use was. I'm sure somebody could tell us. The thing that fascinates me about this, and indeed go back to our talk about bulletin boards, you will always say to me, well, it was done so boffins could share pictures, boffins can share messages. When was the concept of, hey, this could catch on? When did that kick in?
Well, it did from then, but again, it wasn't until the 90s. It wasn't until email started to be popular. And email is, to state the obvious, it's electronic mail. When people started to think that we're hooked up to this internet, there are people connected on the other side, how do I get information backwards and forwards? Email kicked in as a possibility, and we started to see AOL and all kinds of products arrive. Outlook came around. We had Gmail slowly come around. There were providers then that began to think they could set up electronic post offices, which is really what you and I use now.
I wonder if at any stage he had a eureka moment when he was looking at a telex machine.
I don't know. The story doesn't tell us that, but you'd certainly think that he must have. I mean, it's incredible to think how far we have come in communication. It changed the speed, too, and we take it for granted how quickly you and I get messages around the world. You and I send a message from Hong Kong to Melbourne in the blink of an eyelid and don't think twice, but that didn't happen before internet. It didn't happen before email.
Yeah, well, there were two things that are being developed here, probably in parallel. One of them was the technological side of it, and, of course, the other one was a whole new language. You just mentioned the at sign.
Yeah, and the language, but also the speed, Phil. And we shouldn't overlook that you and I now have a desire, whether we want to or not, for instant communication. It all started right there.
Very interesting stuff indeed. I mean, was the only way it could have been used in the old days, as you say, in a sort of industrial level between the profs and the boffs?
Well, it had to be, because there weren't many computers around. We're talking 70s, yeah? So the only people that had them were universities, they were large governments, they were large instrumentalities. I can't imagine who would have had them at home, and certainly the home PC, as we know it, hadn't yet been invented. Jobs were still playing with it, IBM was still playing with it. There really wasn't a commercial version yet.
Yeah, I've just got a little email here from Flora, and she says it was used for bookkeeping. That makes sense when everybody's books and stuff, ins and outs, was done in books with pens.
Well, thank you, Flora.
So he passed on a couple of days ago, and I was listening to an interview, I think it was on the BBC, and they, you know what the obvious question is, they're going, what was the first email? And he said it was just like me sort of going across my keyboard, probably, he doesn't remember. It's not necessary that there was a Thomas Edison moment necessarily,
no.
Was there? Bell moment.
Right? Yeah. Everything I've read about him tells me that too, that he really didn't see this as being something that would take off and be as prevalent as it is now. It was just him finding a shortcut way of sending things backwards and forwards.
Does that surprise you, that a fellow of that brain capacity would think, whatever, it's just a bit of fun?
No.
Or is it just that we do think that way these days as opposed to
that? I think we think that way now. Now, he must have been a really smart cookie, take nothing away from him at all, but remember that this, again, was pre-PC. This was pre-before us all being connected up. Even in the most fantastic thought process, I don't know if he could have seen that 4 billion people on the planet today have it, another 4 are waiting to get it.
He couldn't predict the need for a habit like this, an obsession, a complete world like this, because I suppose it was, once again, it was 30, 40 years ago, completely, you know, completely different way of thinking.
Yeah, it is. And as we point out often, it's incredible because most of our listeners, especially me, can remember back to those times. I mean, we lived through the times when all of that was ordinary, all of that being none of this computer stuff. It was putting a stamp on an envelope. It was waiting overnight. If we had a fax machine, they still hadn't been around yet. Remember the 70s, the fax machines only kicked in late 70s, early 80s. This was telex. Yeah. This was telex days.
The reason I mention telex is I just have this notion of, like, all the principles are there, but it's done outside in the physical world. And I wonder if anybody said, hey, I wonder if we could take what we do in the outside world and put it under the hood of this thing somehow. I just wonder who came up with that big light bulb.
Don't know. And I'm not, it'd be interesting to explore who it was. But again, I don't know whether they could have foreseen what it was going to become. It'd be wonderful to think they could, but I'm not sure they could.
Well, let's talk about where we've reached so far. There's a couple of bits and pieces. I want to talk about Facebook's new video live streaming. Also, I'm noticing Twitter are in trouble for taking down about 125,000 accounts of people who pertain to be from Anonymous, who are having a go at cracking ISIS. So it's going in weird directions, this one. I don't know if it's true.
Yeah, it is, and neither do I, but the story is going around, you're right. And that comes down to who has a right to do that. I mean, Twitter obviously owns the service. But in some ways, even though most people, all of us maybe would agree ISIS is something we want to take down, who eventually has the right to say this is bad, this is good? And the internet was always built or always has been predicated on the belief that it is agnostic, it's open to everybody.
Well, I think it's been proven many, many times that it ain't, but that's the way of the world. It becomes a multi-headed beast.
Yeah,
I want
to
stay with Facebook, particularly because it's a much more popular format here in Hong Kong. Just wonder what you know about the new live video thing.
So Facebook Live is something they've been trialing for about 6 months or so. It's only gone live for mere mortals like us in the last few days, but they put it out to the celebrities and the bigwigs in America late last year. What it's trying to do is to be the equivalent of Periscope or Vine, which is an online way that you and I, from our mobile phone, with no effort at all, push a button and we're streaming live to anywhere in the world. It's kind of like YouTube on steroids. What Facebook is saying is you've got a community anyway. There are lots of people that you talk to regularly in Facebook. You can do all kinds of things to send information backwards and forwards. Why don't you now jump on and do video and show people what you're doing? And they're pushing this. Mark Zuckerberg is very, very keen for this to happen. In fact, he's being talked about as having Steve Jobs moments where he's going around telling everybody in Facebook that they have to make this thing work. He's so adamant about it. What he's talking about, and I think it makes perfect sense, is that even though you and I type messages now, we really don't want to do it. We would much rather speak and shoot video and talk backwards and forwards. And that's why Skype and other things work so well.
Isn't that a bit of an assumption, Morris? I mean, I'd rather, you know, in the middle of something type a message. One of my mates here uses it on his radio program. He was experimenting with it yesterday. I've got some questions, which I should ask him. not you, really, but have you played with it?
I haven't. I haven't yet had an opportunity to. But what we do know that the human habit is that we do prefer the video. We see that in our education system as well, that kids are used to now, unfortunately, having their information dumbed down into short, sharp pieces, and they prefer to watch a video or see something rather than read it. We can argue whether that's good or bad, but it tends to be the way we're going. And Facebook has put some money behind this too. They're going out there, and we don't know the numbers, but it claims they're six-figure numbers to celebrities and NFL stars, particularly this week, which is where they're having their negotiations. That's the Football League in America. And they want those stars to live Facebook. So to commit to doing 3, 4, 2 sessions a week, whatever it is they can, and start talking to their community and get the word out about using this facility.
Well, certainly some of the most popular Periscope stuff is organic. It's, as I talked to you before about, news guys are going to do the stories behind the stories and take you around the scenes.
Yeah.
I wonder if they've been sitting and watching how Periscope does.
I'm sure they have. And they want to do the same thing. They're pushing it, and I don't know how they're going to distinguish this, but they don't really want the YouTube moment. What they want is that, as you've described, that behind the scenes. They want the human touch. They really want people to do what they've been doing in Facebook. And the examples they've put up, which are through TMZ, which is one of the online portals for gossip around celebrities, is using it to do behind-the-scenes scenes. So while
you know, Morris, that Facebook gets very uptight about flesh, even if it's perhaps a statue or something like this. The minute somebody complains, Facebook we'll send you one of those messages or take you down or whatever. How are they going to monitor that on this?
I don't know. I don't know. And there's lots of things we don't know about this. Even Zuckerberg has said that he's making up the rules somewhat as he goes along. The other issue they have is, and one they're being taken to task on literally as we speak, is that apparently quite a bit of material that's on Facebook Live has been taken from YouTube. Now, Facebook hasn't done that. It's people that have liked it that have cut and pasted it in. And YouTube and the owners of that content have taken Facebook to task for breaking copyright.
Yeah. Very interesting to see how this one is going to pan. As I say, I'm really interested because Facebook's huge in Hong Kong. I mean, I don't know what the figures are in your part of the world, but here is the chosen platform.
It is here too. It's the dominant one around a particular age group, which is about 30 plus. It's absolutely, it's a default social media for most people, in the Western world anyway.
There is a thing with Periscope where you can just have absolutely anybody watch what you're doing. I mean, that's one of the beauties of it, going back to the sort of news reporting and stuff. I don't know what the parameters are on Facebook.
And we'll have to see that. But at this stage, what we know is it's the community that you've developed. I'm assuming it has some viral capacity. It's able to be spread out. And
you can just say anybody, like you can say you can have anybody read your post, maybe even do that.
I'm pretty sure that's it. Now, how far that will reach, we'll see, but as I said, Zuckerberg's really keen for it to happen. Behind the scenes, also interesting, Meerkat, which is something we talked about 6 months, maybe 12 months ago, which was the originator of this, that was another piece of software that allowed you to do this live streaming. It was, in fact, one of the very, very first ones. Has almost gone sideways, and they're saying that they're going to move out of mainstream social media and become a niche product because they can't compete with Periscope and what they believe Facebook Live will become.
This is interesting because there's a whole bunch of things that some of which don't exist anymore, but they set the groundwork for a lot of things. Things like Friends Reunited, that was one. That's disappeared.
Yeah.
There's another couple of ones that you could tell were really the cornerstones of Facebook and stuff like this.
Yeah. So it seems that, you know, this predecessor, this thing that really ignited the marketplace, I remember when the conversation started around how different it was, this immediacy of being able to jump in and broadcast from anywhere. So we'll see what becomes of it, but Meerkat seems also to think that Facebook will be a serious contender.
All I can say positively is that I was watching some of it yesterday and the colour was beautiful. The audio and everything, whatever, it cacks and freezes. But the colour was absolutely beautiful. That might be a real selling point for some people at this early stage.
It could be. And the platform's well known, well accepted. If they can integrate it well, then they most probably will do well. But it wouldn't be the first time Facebook's trialled something and it hasn't gone as they wanted it. We know the figures already in the early months, about 5 months it's been on air. They've had 5.7 billion views and they've had 246,000 live streams. So that's
so do they just quietly go away when they come up with something that people don't like or doesn't quite work?
Yeah, they often do that. They often just disappear. What they'll do often, and they did this with Messenger, is they open them up in isolation. So it's not so much a part of Facebook, but you can integrate it with it. And then when it works, they fold it into it seamlessly. So they do one or the other with them.
What about Messenger, Morris? It's still people still consider that really clumsy, the one on handsets. Is it sort of, does it sit with you nicely now, or would you rather it was all in one?
Look, I still think it's better off as an all in one. I don't understand the separation of it. They'll eventually fold it in. They've talked about folding it into mainstream Facebook. You can already get to get all your messages backwards and forwards inside of it, but you've got to program it to do that.
Yeah, couple of minutes left. I want to talk about a survey that interestingly was done by some big time security guys, but it was about Hong Kong. I was writing this morning and I said, you know, your average kid here has so much homework to do, and boy oh boy, very unfortunately it's in the news again today. So of course they spend loads of time behind their computers.
Yeah, they do. And this was a survey done by Symantec, which is a global corporation whose purpose is to make sure that our computers are safe. So they do virus protection and others. This is a global report they put out. They've done them in Australia. They've done them around the world, obviously. In the Hong Kong one, which has just been released, they said, they talked, of course, about the need for online security. They talked about 17% of Hong Kong parents know their children have experienced bullying, and that's a really bad figure. It shouldn't be that high. Well, the thing that I found interesting in that, and I don't quite understand, is it said that that same group, 12% of parents believe that online bullying in the future is likely. Only 12%.
See, I always say it depends who's paying for these surveys. It depends the nature of the person that's paying for these surveys. Well, here we have this huge security group, and they're going to say, I don't know about the figures here.
No, neither do I. So it seems strange to me, because I would have thought that more parents would be and are. I would be sure that more parents are concerned than 12%. The other thing which I think is cultural, interested to hear your thoughts, is from this report as well, it said nearly half of the parents are worried their children will do something online that will put their whole family at risk. And that's not an Australian way of looking at things, because we would talk about the children putting themselves at risk, but here it's really causing shame and hurt to the whole family by what they do.
It's not just shame and hurt. I'm imagining things like we've had a whole spate of various scams. We've talked about this before. You know, people getting rooked out of millions of dollars and stuff. Somebody gets a phone call. Granted, it's different. Somebody pretends to be a mainland security person, da-da-da-da-da, and they completely flip out and they end up losing loads of money. So maybe there's more of a tendency to obey authority or perceived authority.
Maybe, but the emphasis in the report was about the whole family, and I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it.
Well, that would put a whole family at risk if you think about it in terms of people in this part of the world.
So that's the report. And then on that, we were talking about the number of hours that children do in homework. And the thought was, of course, that because they have to spend so long doing homework, they're mostly online doing it anyway. So therefore, they might spend the odd minute or two, that's probably more, but we'll give them the benefit of the doubt, the odd minute or two doing something that's not school-related. I found some research about 15-year-olds and how much time they spend on homework. And the greatest number of hours by a 15-year-old is actually spent in Shanghai, China, and that's 13.8 hours per week. In Hong Kong, according to this research, which was conducted late last year, Hong Kong students on average spend 6 hours per week, and it's in line with Australia, which is also 6 hours. That's homework, doing homework.
No.
The average 15-year-old.
I mean, I can't believe that. Honestly, this morning, there's news going around of something like plus 10 kids have committed suicide since the beginning of this school year for that very reason. It's huge, Maurice. I'd like to say I don't think that's correct.
This is, and again, it's not my research, but it's put out by the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's a global body. So I accept what you're saying, but that's where they sit with that.
Well, I mean, loads of stuff to get into today. I've got to head to the news. So as always, Maurice, thank you so much for your time. Check him out online, business futurist Maurice Misolowski. Have a lovely week, and we'll do it all again in a few days. It's very nearly time now for our news and weather.